Right, mate, we'll start. Where was you born in the village then?
Number 6, East View, Hall Road, Wenhestead, which is one door down from here. Two doors down from here, you could say.
All three of you born there, was it?
No. I think I was the only one born there. Archie and Dick, because they used to live in the little stone cottage down on Blackheath. I didn't know nothing about. These houses here were just been built, see? They were brand new. They built the ones where we're living here now, where the policeman is. This is the policeman's house, obviously. They built these. Then they went a fair long while before they built them. Then they built this pair. Then they built the next pair. Then they stopped again. And in 1934, we moved into that council house there, brand new. That's where I was born, in 1934. Two pairs where Pam Turner lived and Dobler lived. Billy Revel, I don't remember them being built. There might have been about four or five, something like that, when they were built. So they were built a year or two after them ones. These ones here, I believe, were built by the local builder. These ones, because these houses were far ahead of the time, weren't they? This one here. I mean, with the sitting room I got here and the bedroom I got upstairs, which go from front to back, they weren't heard of after. These were far ahead of the time. Well, they never built any more of these, because what I heard is that these were far too expensive. These are cavity wall, actually, which I didn't know. So this one here, that's where the kitchen is there, and this is all extended, see. There's a shed there, and I knocked that all in. We had a little bathroom, pantry, as they call it, out the front, which is now a toilet. The toilet was out here. So that's far ahead of its time, this was, because of the sitting room. As you've gone through life, I did hear they say that these were far too expensive to build, so they had to cut back. Reed of Aldborough built them. But the nicest thing about them, you see, they ain't got no maintenance on the barge boards over there. That's all brickwork, and you see.
You remember all the old shots we had in the village, can you, then, DC?
Oh, yeah, I can remember.
Did you used to go to Myrtle's, much?
Myrtle's, yeah. Burton's then, yeah. Oh boy, Mr. Burton, his big old boy.
What,
yeah.
Before Myrtle had it?
Yeah, well, she was, obviously it was his daughter, see. What's her name at the back road? Post office, weren't there? And there was the one on the
Crossway stores, Bobcatchpole, Hillside stores.
Hillside store, this was a really cheap one, weren't it? Hillside stores, I think. You'd be surprised if people used to come up here on a Sunday morning, used to open for about an hour or 2 hours on a Sunday. Come up for their ice cream.
And you had Freeman's, the coal merchant, the grain merchant, wasn't it?
Yeah, but we also had a baker's, Young's, the baker's. They had Farrier down here. I remember him doing horses down here, shearing horses on the corner here.
Corner, opposite the village hall.
Yeah, and then there was, go further down, you had the post office. No, Jimmy Hammond, shoe repairer, post office, Myrtle. Oh, no, before you get to Myrtle, you got the Young's as the baker. Mr. Bun the Baker, that's the sort of thing. Lovely bread. Every good Friday morning, I'd be up at the crack of dawn, mate, on my bike and down there and get a load of hot cross buns every Friday. And Saunders, I know, got on the corner. Saunders, but I didn't know much about him. I didn't know that he hung himself, Mr. Saunders, there. But yeah, I mean, that was in the book.
What did your father do? Was he a Weniston person all his life, didn't he?
Dad, yeah, he worked on the farm. He worked on the farm all his life.
Which farm?
He was up at Etheridge's farm, Thornton Hall. I couldn't have been very old. I used to go up there with him on a Sunday morning to feed the horses. Bitterly cold in the mornings. I used to go out black dark. I used to get on my little old bike.
Which way did you go to that?
I used to go up Canham's Lane, which is now Branfield Road, but I'll always be Canham's Lane, that's old boys on. Down there and up the line near Thornton Corner. Because I can remember, that sounds so far-fetched, I can remember when they'd done the thrashing, they used to send the horses down, about four horses, to pull the drum up. The old track, they used to pull the straw pitcher, take the straw pitcher up. That's a heck of a rum. That go all right for me, and then halfway up there, there's a still, I don't know if you can even...
That's still the same.
Is it? It's a bit of a slope, yeah. Which go up, that's when my dad used to work up there. Well, then he left there, and he went up Libra Lodge later on. When I was a young...
Was that a brown head out there?
Brown, yeah. And then whilst he was working up there, a horse... Then he left there after a while. Well, that was a lot of years later. He worked up for years. Then he went very well for a time. And then Freeman from the Vale Farm come for him. He went down there. But whilst he was up Libra Lodge, somehow he went over and horsed it on him, caved his chest in a bit. And he never was any the same after that. After that, I don't remember. Mind you, I'm talking here, I'm only a kid a lot of the time, you know, 7 or 8, 8, 9, 10, something like that. Well, in them days, we weren't so bright as they are now, I don't think. So he went to Freeman's But he weren't there very long. He'd done, he was a horseman down for Freeman, did the ploughing for, and with Chris Bird, Chris Bird was the tractor man. Well then, he got very ill, and I was at Halesworth School then, and they took him into Halesworth. I was at Halesworth, he was in Halesworth Hospital. I used to go up and see him at dinner times. They let me used to go up and see him sometimes, and then he never did work anymore, and he died when I was 15. He was 53 when he died, and I was 15. I just left school working for Gays and Seamen over here. That was before any houses were on the St Michael's Way. It was just big wide open fields till I was 16. And then
apprentice builder, was he?
Well, I was just a labourer then. At the same time, George Nicholas, God bless him, let me lay bricks. And if there was a window to block up, he'd let me lay the inside brick. You know, it's lovely. So I got to know. And then when I was 16, God bless him, he died. So the firm shut down. And they were building the houses here near the school. The council houses here, Reed of Albury.
But this side or the
other side of the school?
Star side of the school.
The other side of the school. There was two pairs and a block of four in there. And I went up there as an improver, they called them then. I wasn't hired apprentice, as they say, because I said, look, I've got to go in the army. I know that. And I'd rather go in and get it over with. So I went up there at 16. I went to see Basil Wickens. He was in charge of Basil. He lived up in the first house where young Wallen lived then, where Basil lived. Yeah, he said, all right, boy, you can have a job. And I went straight on a bricklayer with his tuition. He was a good bricklayer, but he's one of the really old bricklayers, you know. You've done as you're told. If not, you got kicked in the arse, sort of thing, you know what I mean? After that, we went to Warpool and built all that along the Warpole Road, Road. After that was it. My time was up. I went to give me a call nut paper. I had to go to Norwich, and then I went to the army in 1952. I went to Bury St Edmunds for 6 weeks, and they said, righto, you'll be going to Germany after our 6 weeks. You can come home for 10 days. You'll report back to Harwich on the boat, Germany. So after, I was only in the army 8 weeks, and I was in Germany. I went in the Suffolks. But we all got transferred, or my intake got transferred to the 1st Battalion of the Essex. They were making the Essex up to go to Korea, you see, for 9 months.
To Germany,
Germany. I was in Lüneburg, in Germany. We trained them most of the time. I ran about on Lüneburg Heath, where the peace treaty, Second World War, was signed, right under the monument there, in 1945. We trained up there. There was all tanks still lying about there, so we used to blow them up, fire at them with our rifles and hand grenades and all sorts of things. We played down there for about 8 months, 7 or 8 months, living out rough in the tents a lot of the time. Never come home at all. Then he said to me, they come to me one day and they said, because they don't call you when they can them, they said, you're an advanced party for Korea. There'll be a an officer, a captain as the officer, and there'll be a sergeant, Bedford, and you from C Company. They said, right. You'll be going home for an embarkation leave in a week's time. So I packed up, said farewell to my old mates, come back to Worley Barracks in Brentwood. They said, right, I got back there. You can go home now for a week. They give me a pass. That's what the laugh that was. They give me a pass. So I came home, and I hadn't been in the army a bloody year then. Mother said, no. I said, yeah, well, I'm off to the Far East. Dear old dad, and so poor old lady. I think I went back for about 2 or 3 weeks. They said, right, we're off. And off we went. And I went down to Southampton. We sailed for Korea in 1953, June. I was on a troop ship. We shared the troop ship with the 1st Battalion of the Royal Scots, because they were going to Korea as well, as a battalion. And there's 1,000 men in the battalion. And there was this advance party. We got on the boat. And as we played out the harbour, I must we'll never forget, us young lads, the Scots got on with their kilt players out on the bandstand, and we were all saying, I wonder if I got anything under there. None of them had. As they come down the ladder, the Scots blew up and show you everything.
A thousand plus.
I think probably about 2,500 on that. Troop ship, we're below the waterline. The only time you get any fresh air is when you're on deck. So we travelled for 6 weeks, but we first called Algiers. We got off and had a look around Algiers. Then we went to Aden, Colombo, Singapore, Hong Kong, and then we docked at Pusan in Korea. So when we got, they said, right, you now got a 24-hour train journey. You'll be standing guard. And they had wire netting up the windows just to stop any hand grenades from coming through. That was what, I mean, the bullets had come through, we all know that. Wooden seats, and we had to take turns and thing, guard, stand on the step, and that took us up to our first camp. God know the name of it. When we got there, it was just a tented area, see? The big old tents we slept in for all the year I was there. All I had for company was South Korean. No other, just the sergeant, captain, I forget his name, captain. And that's all I had, just them two and the rest were Koreans. And I said, they put me in charge of this, a load of Koreans. Well, they're in the army. Sergeant Kim Young John, Obok Su, one of them. I don't remember their names, it's a bit old. And I learnt a couple of three words and I think that's all. But they could all speak English. No, that was good. And I was in charge of them for, well, I was in charge of them, kept an eye on them, and then we had to prepare the camp. The blokes I was on there with, they were in other companies. A Company, B Company, C Company, D Company, HQ and MT. A lot of them boys there, the lorry drivers I'm with on there. Occasionally I used to see through them, but on odd occasions we had to go down to Incheon and places like that to get supplies. So that's when I'd talk to some of these boys. They had only time I'd see them. Dark everywhere, you already had in the thing, it was tilly lamp in your tent, and they used to get about 20 or 30 below freezing at night.
Did it rain much?
Rain. You know, you're now getting rain like that here. Monsoon, as we call it. Well, because our tents had 2-3 foot deep ditches that wide, slope all round to take the water, running off into the paddy fields, you see. Rain? God, the hell did that rain? But we used to work out in it a lot of the time because it was so hot in the summertime. It used to scorch you, man. You'd be out in that working within a half hour, you'd be dragging. That's true. People don't believe it, but that's true. But at night, it was so cold. But anyway, when the battalion come, I'll never forget that as long as I live. I stood on the square, and these truckloads of blokes coming out, they start shouting, Lofty! Because that's all I was known as, Lofty. Lofty! And bloody big handshakes and hugs and kisses or whatever. Brilliant. And at last, I got come. Yeah, I've been there 7 or 8 weeks on my own with these Koreans. But anyway, that went by, so... And then the boys come, and then because the... But before they come, this captain said, it would only be there 2 or 3 days. The captain said to me, I've never... Callum? Yes, sir. We're going up the front line today. We are? He said, yes. And there were bloody great hills being occupied by the Fusiliers. And because the war was still going, and they were still getting shelled and mortared and all sorts of things. So I said, all right. And I went up there with him. It's all right during the day, unless there's snipers about, but you're all right. So we used to climb up this hill. There was all our thing. We'd been cut all the way up the hill where the trucks would go up, see? So up we went, and we got in the... They were all dug in and sandbagged. Big roof covered in, in the CP, occupation, you know, the post where all the officers are. So they weren't. We got in there, and the toilet, I'll never forget, the toilet was about 6 foot high and about 2 sandbags wide, thick. At dusk, you were vulnerable. That's when they started shelling you. And if you go get attacked, that's when they used to come up the hill and shouting the ball. And I got in this loo and I couldn't get out. They started shelling. And I couldn't get out for a while. And anyway, I scrambled out because they shouted to me. The boys were in the trenches near me. They said, stay in there. And so I stayed in there. When I came out, and then I could hear them, you know. That's weird, really, because you can hear the shells coming over you. And the boys used to say, these lads, that ain't for us. You don't hear the ones what hit us. You can hear these ones because they're going right over. And see them bursting about 100 yards, 300 yards away on another hill. That's true, that is. I was talking to one of these lads. And anyway, it's so dark. And I was only telling, went up the line. And when we came out that night, they said, right, you go down this way. And you've got listening patrols and fighting patrols when they go out looking for trouble. The others, you go out and listen. Well, out, dug in at the bottom of the hill. And there's a jeep come to pick us up. And his name was Long. I'll never forget him. He come from King's Lynn. And he was in the Fusiliers. And I'll never forget as long as I live. The officer said to him when he got in, hello, Long. He said, always called him. And we started moving up. He said, can you see where you're going? Because you had no lights. You can't have lights on because they'd shell you, see? As soon as you got you put the lights on, the bloody things they used to shell you with, wasn't it? Mortars and all knows what. So he said, I was sitting in the back. I couldn't see it. And any time now, because you got bloody great drops either side of me. Anyway, we got. He said, no. He said, yes, I'd see. He said, well, I can't. He knew exactly where he was going. And we got back safely. It's wonderful. How they've done it, I don't know. Them things, you know, I lie and think of them now. How you get back. One little false move, you'd have been over the edge. But he could see. After that, like I say, the time just went and the boys come. I tell you what, we had so much turkey out there. I think we were getting a lot of our rations through the Americans, you see. What I did learn, and it's been stuck in my mind all my life, and I went off with this bloke. And on the way back, after we'd loaded up and come back, he said, we'll call and have a cup of tea or whatever at his billet, you see. So in we go, and I'd never had anything like that before. And what they'd got in their cookhouse, they'd got a big notice up in there that said, take as much food as you want, but what you take, you eat. I said, what are you looking at, buddy? I said, that notice. He said, yeah, what about it? I said, good God, man, we don't get enough. We don't get enough to feed us, let alone take as much as you want. But he said, these guys around here, he said, they eat all the time. They did know how they lived well, because we got turkey every day if we want. You get fed up with that, don't you? But when I went off to, then they said, yeah, do you want to go and leave? I said, well, yeah. Go to Tokyo, okay. And then my mate Bert White, old Bert, and he was a real Cockney, born in the Bow Bells, my old dear old mate Bert. And he said, shall we go off? He said, yeah. So they picked us up and off we went to Seoul Airport. We flew from Seoul down into Hong Kong, Tokyo. I did say, you know the big Hercules fly around here?
Yes.
They were known as Globe Masters. We got down to Seoul Airport and there was this plane. We looked out the window and there was this plane with its front down. And we see this line of blokes about from here to the bloody star, three abreast, walking across, you know, just a bit exaggerated, but from the village hall, three abreast, going in up these steps and up, you know, and that was a double decker. And you sit like this, Arthur, you sit like this, this is a gospel, like this, along here, another lot there, another lot there, another lot over there. You've got your earplugs hanging down on string, and when you looked out the window, because they're prop aircraft, bloody wings were going like that. Noise, bloke sat next to you, he's still got air. Oh, the noise, no wonder I've got trouble with blowing ears. Anyway, we come down, touch down, had a fortnight in Tokyo. And when we flew back, we come back in a plane very much like our Dakota. That was much, much better. A lot more comfortable. That was an eye-opener for a lad. I was only, 18, 19. We went into a camp. That was an army camp. But you went in, the uniform you went in was taken off you and they put in a store and you had another one, you know, another uniform. And the beds and everything were made for you by Japanese. And I'll never forget it because when we got there, they give you a lecture. And he said, now listen, it's no good of you fellas waving yen under their noses, these young girls, because they aren't getting to bed with you. So don't try. That was yen, you see, their money. So all right, no. So we did well. I mean, never have enough money to bloody spend. I mean, I saw it for the Americans. They had tons of money, didn't they? We talked to someone before we boarded the plane. Well, we don't tell them how much little money we'd got. They were talking about in hundreds of dollars. Can you imagine? Somebody like, I'm talking about me personally now. You moved out, come out of a village like this, 1 minute, and then you're over there and you're seeing all these lovely, lovely ladies. Split skirts right up here. I wonder what you think you're in on another planet, weren't you? We never got off with any ladies because we couldn't afford it. That was our fortnight. But when we're in Germany, that was a cold day, you know. Damn cold in Germany, you know. Nowhere near as much as that is over there. We had special boots, special socks in the boot, long johns, string vests, and three pairs of gloves. We had fingerless mittens, gloves with a trigger finger in, come up to here, and then you had a pair of gauntlets come right up to here with a trigger finger in. Parkas, never seen a parka before, but boy, you snug you in one of them. You could put it up and so you could just see, but you weren't allowed to pull it up, see, because you couldn't hear nothing. So you were only allowed out about an hour at night. We were, towards the end, we were only allowed out an hour at night on prowler guard. And they'd change you because it was so cold, mate. So cold, it was unbelievable. To go out on patrol at night and lie in the paddy fields. And then, because we had to start clearing up after the war, ceasefire come. I think the ceasefire come just about as the lads were getting there. Something like that, and we used to go out and clear up. We'd come across these shoes with the feet still in them, you know, on the hillside where they'd been blown to bits. And that's what the Chinese is, just to wear them little things like that. You may think that affects you, but that's a lot. You're young, strong, didn't give a bugger for anything, did you really? I can't honestly say, I don't think I was very frightened. I can't imagine being frightened. I write my mother very regularly. She'd send me a food parcel occasionally. Cakes, yeah. The boys, because they'd get shook up a bit, wouldn't it? But anyway, we'd soon devour them. As soon as they come in, we'd soon devour them. But I mean, Mum, yeah, I always ripped the Mum. She was when you think back, your mother was crying her eyes out when I got on the bus. I'd done my national service. I nearly signed on, but I'm glad I didn't. I went, that's funny there, because there was Dougie, and we met Leela, and Jenny and Heather. Well, we met the same night, we all married. Amazing it. We met them all the same night down at Southport. I met her in 54, sorry, and married in 58. Been married 50 years this year, and gone by. Gordon Eves was with us. God bless him. Poor Gordon was the only one out. He was the driver of the car for Gordon. Girls never took to him for some reason. Miss a bit of a drink and have a laugh, and that was it. Nothing very serious, was it? South Ward. When Lena first came to Winniston, he had no china pull. Dry toilet. Oh, could you imagine? Little girl coming down here from South Ward. And she stuck it out, didn't she? I come out in July, and we met these girls later that year. Because we used to go out and about down there and meet all the other girls and that. We never see these ones. And that's when I met her. I went with Gus Clark for a little while.
Agricultural contract.
Yeah, agricultural contract. Then I thought, I don't know, I want a bit more money. So I went with Blastet Stump, Arthur Clark. Blastet Stump on the front of his vans. We went all over the country.
Did you buy this house when you got married?
No. I lived with Mella. When I first got married, Leila said, well, that was her idea, really. She said, well, your mum, why don't we get married and live here with your mum? Mum was all for it. She wanted a little bit of company. And so we lived with Mother. And then, because I got this job with Arthur Clark, and we went all over the bloody country. Oh, that was a bad time. I wish I hadn't have done that. That was one part of my life I wish I hadn't have done. And anyway, I said, Leila used to come up a fortnight at a time, come on a Friday night, late Friday. Be away again Monday morning. Cry, don't go back. Well, it's a job, and I was getting more money with them. Obviously, I were here around here. I used to be sending money home. Sometimes we used to send money home. If not, we used to get paid and bring it home when we came, you know, on a Friday night. We were working at Bista. Friday was with us, you know, Connor, Spence, Friday was with us. We were living in this calf. Very comfortable. We were working on the army base. We were pulling the army camp down. Well, when we first went there, you see, we got talking, they knew we were coming, obviously, we got talking to the authority there, and they said, well, look, why don't you live in the Nissen hut? There was about a dozen blokes or more, about a dozen of us. So they said, yeah, fair enough, so you get, they supplied us with beds. We took our own blankets and that, see, and we lived in this Nissen hut. It was brilliant, really, and we were right on the job. We used to have a big old stove in the middle, middle of the room, because I knew all about that. We had a big old, the opposite side of the road to us, we had the Red Caps, Army Police, you know, the Red Caps. And I went and saw him one day, and we got talking, been in the Army and that. Oh, yeah, been in the Army, what are you doing, boy? Told him where I'd been, crikey, that was it. I'd say, if we run out of anything, I used to go across to him, I'd say, any chance of a bit of bread and butter or bit of bread or butter or cheese. Said, yes, he used to load me up, and I used to take him back to the boys over down in the thingy. It's amazing, really, because me and Friday, on this Friday dinner time, we said, on this particular place, Dave said, we got a bit of bonus in that, so we'll go and send it home by registered letter. Went down the thingy and done our business, went in the calf to have a cup of tea. So we walked in this calf in Bister Main Street in the town, and we walked in there, me and Friday, and this is a gospel fact, and as we walked by this table, there was a little voice said, hello Tony, how are you? I froze. Friday looked at me, said, what the hell are you here? I said, I don't know. There were a load of WAFs sat there, and there were WAFs everywhere. And I turned round, I said, hello my dear, what are you doing? She said, I'm stationed here. And that was Layla's sister's bridesmaid. One of the bridesmaids at Layla's sister. Freud, he said, been all the same, we've got a couple of bits of stuff on the go up here, wasn't it? He said, we'd have got caught. You'd have got caught, my mind you, Freud, you weren't married then. I said, you'd have got bloody caught, wouldn't you? I said, good God, I said, girl, I didn't expect to see you here. No, she said, I didn't expect you did. So I had a chat with her and the other wives who were with her. And that was it. That was the end of that. We never saw him anymore. Well, we saw him. Sort of thing, I ain't been married that long anyway. So we were good boys then. But I stopped with Clark for I come home one weekend and I said, I ain't going back no more. I'd been Britain for Arthur Clark. I don't know if you know the big houses you turn out on the A12 from here. I went there and he said, we built him a really great wall at the back end, put the steps in. He came to me one day and he said, you're wasting your time with me, you know, Tony. I said, you think so? He said, well, if you put a wall up like that, you're wasting your time with me. He said, no, you know, he didn't. He won't try to get not to want to lose you or anything, okay, but you're wasting your time. Well, Friday was my labourer. That's when I went back into building. And I went, and it's a funny thing, you know, it's happened all over again. Because Basil Wickens was working for Ames then as a bricky foreman, living in the same house up here. And I went and saw him. I said, Basil, any chance of getting back in the trade? Well, I expect so, boy, he said. I'll put some feelers out in the morning for you. Anyway, he come back next night, come round. Yeah, he said, you can start next week. Oh, they were someplace. I didn't go anymore. And I felt so strange, you know, working and thinking, I'm going up at night. It's wonderful. Going up at night. I couldn't believe it. You know, so strange after working away. And I was with them then. We were Britain for them for a long while. They decided, Ames decided. They said, right, circular came round. Right, the firm is closing down. Everybody has got to go self-employed. I was about 400 or 500 blokes working for them, eh? All from Gloucester, Yarmouth and around. And within, I think we were the third lot to go. They made us all redundant. Everybody redundant. And started up with, right, the houses are there. Back of the prices. Come brick them up for us. So me and Billy said, well, stick it up your jacksie. We went down to Commonwealth Whiteman down at Harvard. That's where we stayed with Commonwealth Whiteman. And then, from then, we stayed with them for a while, and or a fair while. And we went to Cable St. Mary. Oh, God, we were leaving at 6 in the morning and getting them up at 6 at night. For a long old day. We were bricking up at Cable. We were up there a long while. And then that fell apart. Then we come back to Halesworth, put a few houses up there, and that fell apart. So I said, well, all right. Then I went in the Harwood Road Base. Bloke said to me, why don't you come up Harwood with us, boy? Yes, the money's up there, it's damn good. There's David Woolley, he was foreman, and in the furnaces. So I said, yeah, right. So I went up there, and I stayed up there, what, two, three years. And then whilst I was up there, the blokes kept coming to me. There was a boom on then. I'm talking about in the early 70s. Come on, lad, Tone. Come with us, Rickon. Make your gang up. Blokes from Bungie kept coming after me. Anyway, Buddy said to me one day, but Norman Bird, he said, I'm doing a cottage up on Blackheath, why not come with me? So I said, all right, near and handy, what I done. Then from then on, I went here, I was in for a little while, then I broke it on my own. In 76, that was. 76, I said, that's it, I'm going on my own. So that's what I done. Self-employed then. And that was it. I'm glad that working away, mate. When I look back on that, I cringe. I really do. I had my little Beverly. She's a little old there. I used to come home on a Friday night and she didn't know me, you know, after a fortnight. Little old there. She's really tiny little top, 2 years, less than two, about 18 months, 2 years, 3 years. She used to look at me. I'd see her now standing there looking at me. It'd be late when I get home sometimes. She'd be standing there looking at me with her nightie and her pyjamas and her dressing gown. Layla would say, go and get Daddy's plate for him. I'd been had a sandwich or something when I come home or whatever. Hesitate, and she'd come a little way and then stop. She'd come and get it and walk away. But she wondered who the hell I was. I thought, what am I doing? I didn't like it.
Then you moved into here then, didn't
that's
you?
That's right. I was at Mother's, yeah, and we had Bubby there, and we had Marty there, and we were expecting Stevens. We moved in here, and he was born here. I was 6 weeks getting this place ready, put a new fireplace in there. Because then we had Stuart while we were here, and we used to have three beds lined up. It was like, Mother's, you've all 10 up there. That's the bedroom, it's the same size as our sitting room. They all lay side by side, and they all had their own cupboard, drawer. Yeah, they were happy enough. And Bev had the back bedroom, and we slept in the front one. So we were quite happy. Marty got married first, didn't he, to Paula? He moved out. That left two, so there was more room in there for the other two. Yeah, that was...
Was you a football player for Weniston, Mutson?
Oh, yeah, I played football. I was playing football at Weniston when I was about 14. Went in goal at 15, played in goal for Weniston till I was 15, 16. Then Southwold Town come in for me, which was a hell of a thing in them day. They came in for me, and I went down there for a season in 1951-52 season. They used to send the taxi for me, pick me up at the gate, take me at the football mat, bring me back.
Really?
Played with them for a year, and then that was in 51-52. We finished playing football in the May, and that's when I went in the army in the June. And then when I come out of the army, they said, come back, come play for Southwold. I said, no, I'll play for Weniston. So I played for Weniston, and then I played for Halesworth. We sort of stuck together here as a village team. I could have went a lot higher if I'd have wanted. I was 6'2" when I was about 16, 17.
Yeah. And then you carried on supporting the football and watched your sons do through it then, didn't you?
I played till I was about 30, 33. And my shoulder kept dislocating then, so that was it. I finished it. And then I took up refereeing for a while. I went and done a lot. Because I became a committee member. You know, I was vice chairman, then chairman.
Of Weniston Football.
I was chairman, now I'm the honorary member, what they call them. Yeah, but I don't have nothing to do with them now. I said, Layla still make tea for them. She would make, her and Heather make tea up every Saturday for the football team. So Marty is doing the pulling the money in. and Ashley play. Now, I've got another grandson, Beverly's son, is now playing in goal for the reserves. And Toby, his brother, he's a good footballer. He's now passed one class to go for Suffolk, so he's ended up playing. Lovely boys, lovely boys. Oh, well,